time for our weekly house call and visit with Dr. Kevin Moe, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. Hey, Doc, good morning. How are you doing today?
Good morning, Bob. I'm doing great for a Monday morning.
Yeah, you sound like it. We like to hear that. We're going to talk about heart health in just a second, but I want to get to something first that I saw last week about saffron, and apparently there's been a lot of research. Scientists have been looking into saffron as a protection, protecting the retina and helping macular degeneration. Is there anything to this?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. So, you know, people say, well, what's macular degeneration? But people need to understand that's the most common cause of blindness for people as we age. So you might see the acronym AMD, age-related macular degeneration, and it's where individuals who have been out in the sun for a lot of times in a long period over years and years and years damage the macula, which is a portion of the retina. And it appears that saffron actually, you know, has a great benefit to not only slow that, but in some cases actually even reverse some of the changes that we see with AMD.
And there's a supplement, I guess, that a lot of people are wondering about. Is it safe? Does it really do anything? And obviously, you need to check anything with your doctor. But what's your view on this?
Yeah, you know, the interesting thing about all supplements is that the FDA doesn't regulate them. So they can make pretty much any claim they want to make. And if you look at saffron, boy, a lot of claims have been made. You know, they talk about it being great for your eye health for sure, but even there's some studies that show that it works with some depression in people, Alzheimer's, heart disease, diabetes. So we know that it's loaded with antioxidants. We just don't know exactly what all the studies would show is if we put them up against other alternatives. So as a supplement, not a bad idea. I mean, make sure you get a reputable one. Make sure you talk to your doctor about it. And understand that saffron is the most expensive spice known to man, so you're going to be paying a little bit for this as well.
Yeah, I was curious about how you can get saffron other than in the supplement, but it's a spice that you can add to almost anything, right?
Correct, yeah. You can go to the grocery store and get it. Often it's going to be behind the counter because it is so expensive. You might have to ask the manager for it. But, yeah, it's a spice that can be added to food. We've known about it for thousands of years. And right now you're going to start to see more and more as we start to try to get into more natural healing and more natural-based foods to show their powerful benefits. We know it's loaded with antioxidants, so there may even be a strong play for cancer fighting with saffron. The goal will be how can we manufacture it a little bit better? How can we produce it more efficiently just because of the cost?
You know, one of the reasons I enjoy our visits, Doc, is because you do have an open mind about Eastern medicine, and you kind of combine the best of Western medicine with a holistic approach. Is that how you think most of the time?
I try to, Bob. You know, I'm not a person that says, you know what, we are at an age right now where you tell me the ailment you have, I'm going to give you a drug. You know, that's just not where we should be right now. We should really be looking at what can we do to prevent. What can we do to live more healthy? What can we do for our diet? What can we do for as far as our exercise? And actually even, you know, what can we do for increasing the activity in our mind? We're sitting here looking at baby boomers really going into this aging process right now. And we have to have a very open mind on what can be the best. And it shouldn't be as simple as you have this, let me give you this drug. We should be looking at other opportunities. And you look at even some of the pain-related stuff we're talking about with opioids right now. Look at what the Eastern, you know, medicine has done here with acupuncture, acupressure, relaxation techniques, things that we can really use instead of just always going to a medication.
Continuing with Dr. Kevin Most, and Friday's Valentine's Day, so this is Heart Health Month. Let's talk a little bit about heart disease, and especially women whose symptoms are different than men's as far as heart attack, correct, Doc? Oh, let's press his button here so he can tell us about that. Go ahead, Dr. Most.
Hello there. I lost you there for a couple of minutes.
Let's talk about what the symptoms are in females for heart problems.
Yeah, so, you know, heart disease is very, very common, and people don't really think about it, but they think, wow, do we realize that women have heart disease as much as men have heart disease, and we don't notice that. However, the symptoms are different. In women, they'll often come in saying, you know, I feel a little bit of short of breath. They might have pain in either arm, where men classically will have it in their left arm. They have back pain, which is very unusual for men to have back pain with heart disease. Usually it's the anterior chest or the front of the chest. And then they also can come in with just nausea. So they come in feeling, you know what, I think I have a touch of the flu. You know, I'm a little dehydrated. My back hurts a little bit. I'm a little nauseated. And, you know, we as physicians have to always keep that in the back of our mind of what should we look for in heart disease in women versus what do we look for heart disease in men.
And as far as men go, you always hear about chest pain and or pressure in the chest. Wouldn't that be something that both men and women would feel if they're having a heart attack?
Yeah, sometimes they can. Sometimes women will talk about chest pain or chest pressure. You know, you often will hear from the man saying, oh my gosh, it feels like someone's sitting on top of my chest. You know, they'll make a fist and they'll put their fist right on top of their chest. And that's kind of almost an international sign for us to say, wow, we're concerned here. So men and women can both have that. Women just often have these other subtle things. And when we think about the general population, we think about women's health, we think about, oh, we talk about breast cancer, we talk about ovarian cancer. We have to realize that heart disease is much more common than those.
And I'm looking at the list you sent over, some statistics about heart disease, and some of them are quite striking. Are we doing better here? Are things getting worse?
We really aren't doing too much better. We expect here over the next decade or so to start doing better. From a treatment point of view, we are. If you think about now, you probably know more people who are on statin drugs, in other words, cholesterol-lowering drugs, than you do people who smoke. In other words, we have more people lowering their cholesterol than we have smoking, which is good. And it's great that we have these medications that we didn't have 20, 30 years ago. So at least we're starting to do some of that prevention side of it. But it still is the number one cause of death, and we really don't see anything changing here. And there are, if you look at some of these stats, they are very staggering. And you pick out a couple that, and we'll talk about them because they're very interesting.
Yeah, one that caught my eye really involves high school students. Where is it here? That 73% of them do not get the Heart Association recommended 60 minutes of exercise daily.
Yep.
And that's so important to get those good habits started early. And actually, and from what we're hearing, what you eat and your exercise habits in your younger years can come back to haunt you later, can't they?
Absolutely. You're spot on right there. You know, when we look at the youths of what's going on right now in the youth as far as exercise, there's a couple things that happen there. One, even look at the schools right now, where some schools have pretty much eliminated gym class almost. And even if they do, they have a very short period of time. And when they're doing that, those individuals aren't really getting what we would call quote-unquote exercise, where you're getting your heart rate up. So that, and now we're taking a group of people right now that have a much more sedentary lifestyle. They're much more playing video games and doing social media than they are going outside. You know, when's the last time you drove down the street and saw kids outside playing a baseball game or doing things? So that is a really big concern. And like you said, that sets the foundation of what you're going to do as you age. Look at the obesity problem we have in this country right now. If we don't teach these kids to eat right and exercise at this age, it's only going to get worse as they age.
What are the numbers now for blood pressure? Haven't they recently changed?
Yeah, that's an interesting thing. You know, we used to say, well, what's a good blood pressure? Well, you know, if you keep it over 140, over 90, that's fine. And, you know, a couple years ago, we said, a big study came out and said, no, we need to lower this. You have to remember the heart is just a pump. And if you can make it work as efficiently as possible and still get all the benefits of it, that's exactly what you want to do. So now we look at 130 over 80 is the norm, what we want to be at. We would love to see that high number, the called the systolic number of 130, when your heart is working the hardest. We want to see that at 130 or below. The 80 is called the diastolic number, and that's when the heart is at rest. How much pressure is it still generating while it's at rest? So we really want to see those as low as possible without you getting dizzy, without you having problems standing up and walking and running and keeping your heart rate up. So we really have found that the lower we can keep our blood pressure, the less damage it's going to do to our kidneys, to our heart, to our eyes. So very important that you know what your blood pressure is and that you're much more aggressive in keeping it down.
And is it diet and exercise that will affect blood pressure more than anything else?
Yeah, absolutely. Diet, exercise. And to be honest with you, fortunately now we've seen a decrease, at least somewhat of a decrease in tobacco use, because we know that that will impact your blood pressure. The other big thing, Bob, is that get rid of the salt shaker at your table. Don't put that out there, especially if you're eating any prepared foods. There is plenty of sodium in prepared foods. If you go to a restaurant, there's plenty of sodium in that food. You do not need additional salt. The salt portion, the sodium portion of that will raise our blood pressure as well. So lay off the cigarettes, lay off the salt, get some exercise, and those would definitely be good things for your heart.
6:54, we're talking with Dr. Kevin Most, Chief Medical Officer for Northwestern Medicine. How about screening for heart disease? Are we doing a better job now? And what are the tests that everybody should have?
Yeah, the screening for heart disease, you know, one obviously is know what your cholesterol level is. You know, we want to make sure that you keep that total cholesterol level below 200, and we want that HDL, the high density cholesterol, we want that over 50. We'd love to see it close to 70. That's the good cholesterol. So that's one screening number you should know. The other screening number you certainly should know is your blood pressure. If you know those two numbers and you know your family history and you know your lifestyle, that's going to tell you where you are as far as the risk factor. If you have somebody who's died of heart disease in the past, your physician might say, you know what, I want to do a stress test on you every 2-3 years. And then we also have a lot of new technology. CT scans now can show how much calcium you have in your arteries, and does it show that you're at a higher risk for future heart disease.
And do the latest studies still say good things about dark chocolate and red wine as far as heart health is concerned?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we tell everybody, okay, stop smoking, no more salt. But at least we can say, hey, have some dark chocolate and have some red wine. So absolutely, we know that those two are going to be protective of your heart, and as well as they have a very high in antioxidants. So it's going to give you some heart benefits as well as some other benefits. So I'm not saying go out and drink a bottle of wine every day, but, you know, a glass or two of red wine, especially in women, has been shown to really be helpful towards their heart health.
And how much dark chocolate can we eat before the fat content gets to us?
Yeah, actually, you know, if you look at dark chocolate, and good dark chocolate has very low fat content in it. So it's actually, you know, you can eat a small bar of that and still get the benefit there. And, you know, people use it to cook as well now. People put dark chocolate in chili. They put dark chocolate in cookies. They put dark chocolate in a lot of sauces. So they're going to get that heart benefit because it's not so sweet. It's more of a acquired taste, I'll say, for the dark chocolate lovers.
70% is the magic number, isn't it?
Yep, it is. You're exactly right. 70% of the cocoa. Yep.
Well, I'm going to put saffron in my salt shaker. That's what I'm going to do. And it's Dr. Kevin Most, Chief Medical Officer for Northwestern Medicine. Thanks, as always, Doc. And we look forward to chatting with you next week.
You got it, Bob. Take care.
All right, sir. Have a good day.